Now we are not able to determine for all our closures in certain years because that will imply that we will take the Department of Labor to do all that jobs for us. And many of them are maybe not in the state and they lost track of them. In the previous or in the current, because the new 9/11 report is not placed yet, in the current one, there is something that says how much you are making a week. And the maximum is 3 pages, meaning 999. So if somebody was making more than $999 per week, which we have several clients now, it wasn't reported. I mean, it was an unfair average, okay? But with the new standards and indicators, you can plug the real numbers, all the numbers. I mean, with the new 9/11 format. And they are going to institute that kind of reporting mechanism in the computer themselves. So when they report officially their statistics, that will be there automatically, or which in the past wasn't. So it will be much easier starting next year or so. But now I will say that it will be almost, you have to do it manually, and it will take the Department of Labor to do it for us.
Can I have a question or comment that during your presentation, said the client can take any job, but one job with informed choice, and then you went on to say no failure workshops, so forth. Seems like that is the old bugaboo we've had for years and years, if you have free choice, as long as you agree with our choice.
No. What I tried to say is that we will let the clients to choose any job. We will inform them about all their choices. If they want to work on shelter work, that is fine. Now, I was separating about shelter workshop later on, that according to the new standards and indicators, shelter workshop is not considered competitive employment. However, it's a choice.
And we will be going into that in more detail later on in the meeting.
And
I have information about that and what we do with regard to that choice. But I won't go into that detail now.
Okay.
That's okay.
Sounds good.
Is there a way in?
Okay, guys. I am going to cut off questions until Bob Deaton has been given a chance to do his half of the presentation. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Actually, Carlos, in doing his presentation, helped me out a lot because there are the parallel similarities between the IL program and the VR program. As far as how you develop the case and follow it through, you know, the stages of the status is very much the same. Acceptance, the writing of the plan, which is an individualized plan for independent living. The service delivery, and there's no placement, really. The person reaches their independent living goals and the case is closed. Before I go into that too much, I thought it would be a good thing to talk about supported employment because it is a vocational rehab services and it relates to the services that ER clients get. Supported employment is funded separately from other clients identified as voc rehab clients. They're funded by Title VI, Part C of the Rehabilitation Act. And we get $30,000 a year for that. It's not a large amount of money, and we don't have a lot of clients that are identified as supported clients. We have about 17 right now. The numbers have been growing steadily over the years. The reason why I supervise that is because of my special interest in supported employment. Before I came to Nebraska, I coordinated services in a sheltered workshop for people with developmental disabilities in Minnesota. Part of what I did back in the early 1980s was supported employment. That was at a time when supported employment was more an idea. It was not a concrete service that was delivered very many places. In fact, back in those days, people with developmental disabilities were often regarded as handicapped too severe. inappropriate for receiving services from state agencies, state rehabilitation agencies. That changed as we got into the 80s, and the Rehab Act was amended to provide funding support for specifically for this population. So the money that we get for supported employment has to meet certain criteria. The individual served must have a goal that will place them in the community. The placement needs to be integrated. It needs to be minimum wage, at least at the time of closure. A person may be set up on a job with a sub-minimum wage certificate, but it's not supported employment unless the eventual goal is closure at minimum wage. It needs to be, when I say integrated, that means it needs, the placement must be in an environment in which the person is working with a non-disabled population. It must be, it must be at least 10 hours a week, I believe, is what I worked out there, standing there. So, so long as those criteria are met, then the case is supported in employment. Oh, also, I knew I was doing something. The person needs to have a lifelong need for support, a job coach, okay? Now, the idea, of course, if you set somebody up in a supported employment situation, you're going to reduce that person's need for support to minimum levels, so that they're doing the job as independently as possible. But it's understood that the person's need for support will essentially be ongoing. Now, supported employment, according to the Rehab Act, can be funded by state agencies, state rehabilitation agencies, for up to 18 months. And then the funding, if there is continued funding for support, it needs to be transferred to another party. Okay? Here in Nebraska, most often that translates into the developmental disabilities system. They're the source for funding past 18 months. There are other disability groups that could benefit from supported employment. People with traumatic brain injury, mental illness, conditions like that would prevent them from being independent as they could be on a job without support. Unfortunately for populations such as those, the funding, ongoing funding source simply doesn't exist. So it can be a real problem for some people. I think we're looking at serving people with special needs in these areas through other types of things. If a person has SSI, for example, a PATH plan can be developed, which will allow for payment of a job coach with the money that they would have otherwise lost if they didn't have a PATH plan. And that will work if the need for support is fairly minimal, let's say for a couple hours a week. A PATH plan could pay for a job coach. If the need is more substantial than that, then that doesn't work so well. But we are looking at strategies like that for serving some individuals who have that need. That is supported employment, as much as I was going to say on that subject. Before I go on to anything else, is there questions about that?
It would seem like people in that category, you know, maybe that's the best they could ever do employment-wise. With limited funds, how is it decided which ones will get this opportunity? Or are there certain employers that you work with that provide these kinds of jobs that they can do?
Well, again, the job that we're looking at are really the larger job market. Wherever a person is able to use the skills they have to work, that's where the place is going to occur. So there are no employers that specifically hire, and besides if there were, they wouldn't be interviewed. So anyway, generally there is a team that works with most of the individuals that have this ongoing need. A person with a developmental disability is likely to have a case coordinator with the Health and Human Services, EDS system. And that means that the person would also have an individualized program plan, an IPP, with regular meetings to reassess the individual goals, which would include vocational as well as independent living goals. Our counselors participate in IPP meetings for those clients that require that service.
Is this a supported employment? Is it available for through other departments for people that don't have a visual?
The general agency has funding for supported employment as well.
So is it, how is it decided if the Commission for the Blind isn't involved in the payment of that versus the, is it just if blindness is one of the components and is...
If the person is blind, then you serve them. It doesn't matter what the other disabilities are. Okay. If they're eligible for our services, then we are the primary agency. Can I go on then?
Sure.
All right. Now, Title VII of the Rehab Act is allocates money for independent living. Now, there's actually different sections of that. The Centers for Independent Living get money through that part of the Rehab Act, too, like the League of Human Dignity. The agency, the commission, actually receives funds from two parts of Title VII. One is Part B, and that's what we use for under 55, like I was saying before. And then Chapter 2 of Title VII is what we get for the Older Blind Program. Now, in both cases, the level of service is fairly minimal. Needs can often be taken care of in a fairly short period of time as far as training and equipment and that sort of thing. It was, at one point in the Older Blind Program, we had many people that would join a support group and continue for years and years and years. And we would carry them on the caseload, and after a while, the number of people that we were tracking in the Older Blind Program increased every year, and so it was getting quite large. I think in 1999, we finally decided that we were going to close people after 1 year because the numbers were growing so big that it was becoming a paperwork burden to have to renew the plan every year. Independent living services, like vocational rehabilitation services, requires that we review a person's plan once a year, at least. So in both cases, the client and the counselor would amend the plan if there were changes that were required or are required. Or if there are none, then a new document is generated in which the person verifies that they're content with services. Okay? So in any case, half of the caseload of older blind clients served by the agency is now half of what it was about a couple of years ago. I think we were approaching 1,100 or 1,200 clients served. That doesn't mean that there are fewer people that are, we're still serving the same number of people in the same way. It's just that we're no longer tracking some of them. Many of these people that we closed are still continuing to attend support group meetings. Okay. Home teaching is the primary mode by which we provide services to people who need training in alternative techniques for blindness. And so long as home teaching is provided in that manner in the home, the person will continue as an independent living client. If they require more comprehensive training, if they go into a special program like Home Teaching Plus, which is a week-long program held once a year in North Platte, the next one is to take place in September, or if they come into the Orientation Center, for training there, the person is more than likely, the person will be, not more than likely, will be transferred to the vocational rehab caseload. Okay. And really, I don't know what else I can really tell you that would be more than that.
If the older blind program had more money right now, are there things that aren't being done that could be done or expanded?
Well, let me talk about that, yeah, because that's good, because I have given a lot of thought to that. I didn't really talk about the network of support groups, which I think is an important means of delivering services to older blinds. Years ago, in 1986, the visually impaired peer support was incorporated with, I believe they had 12 groups at that time. And they do receive funding from us, $31,000 a year, to reimburse drivers who transport people to and from support groups, and also to support other activities like the spring conference that they have each year. There are now 50 support groups. Okay. In the beginning, much of the support, the group facilitation was provided by my agency staff. And that was fine until the numbers of groups continued to grow to the point where that is beginning to be a real problem. CAP cannot continue to provide quality support to these groups. And at the same time, refocus or rededicate their energy to placement. You know, we're, a greater emphasis is being placed on placement activities. And so we have to find a different way to serve groups like the support groups in BIP. And so right now I'm in the process designing or developing a training program that will take a few product groups and begin helping individual members in groups facilitate their own groups rather than relying on staff to do it for them. That will require training, and once it's instituted, it'll need to be maintained. I do see that there is a vast unmet need out there. At one point, I believe we, Pearl did some research that indicated that there's 20,000, more than 20,000 people over the age of 55 that have a significant visual impairment that cannot be corrected. So I think we've done well in developing a system that works as well as it does, but we are reaching a point now where we have to look at doing things differently.
Thank you, both Carlos and Bob. Are there any other questions? We really need to be moving on if there aren't, but if there are, I don't want to stifle anybody either.
I just had one quick one for Carlos, and if it's a long answer, you can tell me the answer later. I guess in thinking about this, the homemaker issue again, is there any way to develop, the full rehab, the 9 months at the center, all the intensive thing to get a person competitively employed versus the, what might be necessary for a homemaker option. Is there any reason not to think about a plan, designed for that outcome that maybe is less comprehensive because there's, less requirements, or is that something like that not feasible or doesn't make sense, or what are your thoughts?
I'm sorry.
Let me go ahead and field that. I would say we already do that. If there's a less intensive need, then for whatever reason, and often it is that the person is more interested in homemaker, just basic independent living skills training, then they become an independent living client. And so we do in effect do that. I do think there's maybe a distinction, I keep hearing just a homemaker. There's a difference in the skills needed by an individual who is, oh, say, retired, they want to stay in their own home, they, you know, need the basics, as opposed to somebody who's raising a family, handling the budget of their family, being, you know, more of a homemaker. That's really a much bigger, well, the society doesn't pay for it, but it's certainly a much bigger job than someone just being able to stay independent in their own home. If they're raising children and keeping, you know, the whole family types of duties. So I think to some extent what our counselors do with when we work with individuals is make that distinction a little bit. And the level of intensity that the person needs will direct them to independent living as opposed to a both rehab.
Because I would think once a homemaker maybe sees that they can do more than they thought they could, that that might
You're right.
open and up their whole, you know, their whole...
Yes. And actually, we have pretty systematically been looking at that, and any time we have a homemaker goal, we make sure that the counselors working with them really do explore. In fact, we do that with all clients, but we really do explore what are the things that you're doing. There have been a number of situations, more in the more rural part of the state, where somebody had a homemaker goal, but when we really looked into it, they were still managing the ranch or the farm. They were still taking care of all the insurance and deciding which seeds to purchase, etc. And it didn't seem like they were having a job, but in fact, the goal was rancher, you know. And so, yes, we do really look at that. And we're not just we look at it, but we really help the person explore what they're wanting to do, what they can do, what the potentials are. I could also add that any pieces of what was discussed today that either you think of now or later you would like to be in depth on, you can certainly do. Because every little piece of this, we could have a whole session on at a later date. Just let us know.
Okay.
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
We have, I don't know if this is a request or a suggestion or a motion or what, but we have a real important item on here, that radio talking book. I'm wondering if we couldn't bring that up now, then I take this financial participation right after we expose the radio talking book. Doesn't matter, courtesy to our guests, I'm sure we want to get on the limit.
Does anybody on the board have an objection to switching those items around?
No.
Okay. It makes sense to me, and so at this point we will move along to the item on the radio talking book overview, and I'm guessing, Mr. Fullerton, that you would be the one who would want to begin that item?
I'd be glad to.
Okay.
I'd be glad to. The church I go to, our definition of a good sermon is it lasts about 15 or 20 minutes, which is about how long we wanted to spend with you. We certainly wanted to respect your time, and we could have brought a lot of people down here, but we really opted not to do that. And as you know, I'm here, Dick Slab, who's our station manager, is here, Ruth Hafke, who uses our services, is here, and Jim Famous here, who's chairman of the board. I know you all know about Radio Talking Book, and I don't want to go into any detail at all about the services. As you know, the Radio Talking Book Network has been around since 1974, and we serve all of Nebraska. And we're on the air 365 days a year. Listening Link, which I do want to talk about a little bit, because it's a very important service that we do. It's a newer service that we provide. We put textbooks on tape for college students. We also have a program called Audio Description, where we narrate live performances with a describer to listeners equipped with portable receivers. The Radio Talking Book Network was the sixth radio reading service to go on the air. We've been on the air again since 1974. radio reading services are expanding all over the country and all over the world. There are 125 now in the United States and Canada, New Zealand, the United Kingdom. There's a lot of support for radio reading services. Congress recently, you may know or may not know about low power FM. Low power FM is going to go forward, but not as originally proposed to Congress because they were so concerned with any potential disruption of radio reading services. Governor Johans has been a big supporter of Radio Talking Book. I'll mention that a little bit later. And we've certainly had an important relationship, partnership with RSVI, and of course now NCDVI. The funds we've received have been absolutely critical to us. It is so hard to go out and raise operating dollars, and we were able to use that money for operating dollars. In the late 80s, we were getting $45,000 a year. At that time, that was about half of our budget, half of our revenue. And throughout the 90s, we continued to grow, serving more people, adding more programs, audio description in the late 80s, listening link in the mid-90s. And if you look around the country, it's unusual among services such as ours that they provide this many services. Again, talking about the revenue, in 2000, the 50,000 that we received through you was less than a quarter of our revenue. It's 22% of our revenue. As I said, 10 years ago, it was half of our revenue. We've continued to grow, we've continued to provide services, but proportionally we've been getting less and less from RSVI and, of course, now NCDVI. We were really disappointed to learn that there was a proposal to cut what we're getting. I guess the figure we heard was $20,000, which would give us $30,000 a year from NCDVI. That would get us down to 13% of our budget, which would really put us in really difficult straits because, again, it's just is so hard to raise operating funds. And when we're continually growing, the Nebraska population is aging, and, of course, so is the blind population. And we serve predominantly older people. There's no question about that, but we serve people of all ages. And I want to talk about that in just a second with Listening Link. Because I'm not sure if everybody knows about that program and how it's developed over the years. Again, we read textbooks for blind college students, and it's been an important program. There's 70 volunteers in the program. Already in 2001, we've taped 53 projects for 25 clients. This represents 759 tapes, and it took over, about 1,200 hours to complete. We've taped projects for Bellevue University, the College of St. Mary, the Creative Center, Creighton University, Iowa Western, Metropolitan Community College, Midland College in Fremont, the Omaha Public Schools, School of Massage, Southeast Community College, the University of Florida, the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, University of Nebraska Medical Center, University of Nebraska-Omaha, Wayne State College, the Westside Community Schools. I could go on and on, but I looked to see who our last three clients were that we've been taping textbooks that we've added to the Listening Link program, and they were all vocational rehab clients, and our service was recommended to them and coordinated with the educational institutions through NCDVI counselors. And these students came from the School of Massage, Southeast Community College in Milford, and Bellevue College. Again, I just wanted to make sure you understood what we were doing about with Listening Link. We were unable to, it's a Saturday in July is a tough time to get a student here. We do have a tape from a person from Metro Community College, and I think this is a good time. We'll just play the tape. It's just about 2 minutes. He mentions Janet McRae's name in there. Janet McRae is the coordinator of the program, and that's why she's mentioned. She asked him and asked if he'd be able to come to the meeting, and he was out of town, unfortunately. But he said, I'll be glad to tape a tape. And Dick, if we could do that now, I'd appreciate it.
My name is Mark Hunt. I'm Director of Academic Support Services at Metropolitan Community College here in Omaha. I wanted to speak to you today in presence person, unfortunately. I'm out of town on college business, but I did want to get word to you about the importance that the college has in working with ListenLink. And I was happy to accommodate Janet McCray in making this tape today. I wanted you folks to know that the college uses ListenLink on a regular basis to help us with students' accommodations. When students with disabilities need to have accommodations relative to taping books on tape, we use the ListenLink almost exclusively. For instance, last year, ListenLink made 590 tapes for us, which covered 49 textbooks for 35 different students. And this kind of accommodation is very important to the success of our students, especially students who are blind and visually impaired. Books on tape allow a student to participate in classroom activities in the sense that they will be using the same textbook that any other student is. This is their way of accessing the written material. So we, as I mentioned, we use the ListenLink service on a regular basis, and we have for a number of years. And I encourage you to keep that information in mind as you consider the financial decisions that you're about to make. If anyone would like to contact me for further information or would like to discuss this further, you're certainly welcome to do so. My phone number is at the college is 457-2641. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dick. And we have Ruth Hapke here, who's a Radio Talking Book Network listener, and she also enjoys some of the audio description events. And we just thought, again, we could have dragged lots of people down here, but again, we wanted to respect your time, and I just thought if Ruth had anything to say, we'd appreciate that, Ruth.
Well, I most definitely would like to. My husband just died, he had cancer, and he also had his second heart pacer. So I learned the support, and so much you needed a support group to help you through hard times like that. So right away, after you get, I contacted a group, and I was blind, and I went to the group, and there a lady told me about Radio Talking Book, and I thought, that's the very answer. I don't want to be an old lady sitting in the back saying, you've got to help me, I can't see. I want to be someplace where I can do and help others. I want to be a helper, not just a back sitting back in the corner. And she said, then go to the playhouse and they do this. I said, what is that thing? I want to know about that. And I want to know about everything else. And I ended up with Radio Talking Book. It is wonderful. I can no longer read the newspaper, but I want to know what's going on in the world. Oh, you can turn on the television. But this is close. These are people. They tell me how to cook, how to put something in, a new recipe. And I think, well, that could be interesting. Or they say they're going to go someplace. My first question is, how on earth can the blind go to the playhouse? How can they do these things? But I wanted to do them. I want to stay in my house more than anything else. I've lived in Omaha most of my life, and I've been in this little house for a very, very long time. So I'd like to stay there. Tell my children, which isn't very great. But if they find me dead there, don't worry about it. My children are scattered far away. Mother, Jesus, Mother, you've got to move today. Who in the heck wants to go to Texas? I agree. And so I want to stay there. And I say, if you find me dead on the floor someday, that's just where I want to be, here in my house. And so with this, I'm doing all these things. I make calls. I found out about them. I'm very busy. And then I say, now, how can I help? I still have a little sight. I want to know how to stay in my house. I want to know what other people do. It's been a great education to find out about that. When they said they went to the playhouse, how on earth can they go to the playhouse? Never heard of that. They said, well, somebody tells us about it, so we listen to them. I've done all of that, and I want to stay here. My daughter says, move, and I say, no, I won't. And I know this from years of the blind. My own mother was blind, and I carry her pain. She was told she lost it with a stroke. I was told the same thing. I had lost the sight in one eye. I had a little left in the other. It was a stroke. I read the chart one day, and about a week later, I couldn't see. So I thought, I want to know how I can live in my house. And that's why I called and found out about these different things. And it's Radio Talking Book that reads to me, that tells me what's going on. I can't read the newspaper anymore, but I listen to it. I turn it on, I know something. Oh, that's Dick today. No, he's not there, that's Ben today. I've learned all these things with the help of Radio Talking Book. Because I thought otherwise, well maybe, like my mother, you just stayed home and waited to die when you got old and couldn't see. But you don't, you can be out there. And I wanted to be someplace where I could help, because I have the background of my mother not seeing, and now I don't see. So I couldn't get along without Radio Talking Book. It sits, of course, in my kitchen, because where is a woman most of the time? In the kitchen. And I turn it on. I'm a good sweet, I have to have coffee. Early in the morning, I turn it on when I'm making coffee. 10 o'clock, I'm in there listening again. I have the program pasted up on the wall beside me with a big magnifying glass. I can read it. So I know at what time they're reading the grocery ad. I know which grocery store I want somebody to take me to because they got all the things I want. And I know all the different things that are going on. And I said, I want to help. I find my phone is ringing time and again. Ruth, are you going to that meeting? How can we get there? So I tell them, well, so-and-so is by you. Go down there, get a cab and go there. Or I'll share a cab and go there. They ask me time and again. That's what I want to do. I don't want to sit back and be this old lady you can't see. And it's all through Radio Talking Book, because they are the ones that inspire me. They tell me what's going on in the world. They show me that I can do those things. I can show other people how to do those things. And they thank me for it. I don't take the World Herald. I can't read it. I wouldn't know what was going on. I could turn on the television, yeah. But I turn it on and I say, hey, that's Dick today. He's working today. Another day. No, that's Ben. I know that voice. It's my lifeline to life and being in there and pitching and doing things myself still. I'm not going to Texas, not for a long time. Thank you for the baby you're talking to.
Okay, thanks a lot, Ruth. I might just briefly share. We always like when we get comments from listeners and people. I might just share just a few of these with you. A woman from Omaha called recently to say, thank you for sending the Talking Book Radio. Reception is perfect. I appreciate the news and the old radio programs. And a donor from Texas says her aunt's life is truly enhanced by the gift of your service. A listener wrote in appreciation of the reading of the North Platte Telegraph, which is beautifully presented with such a wonderful voice. I really appreciate this service, for I cannot see to read the paper anymore. A supporter from Grand Island wrote in, thanks for making my wife's life a lot brighter. She really enjoys the programs. From Special Support Services at Metropolitan Community College, thank you for all you do. A listener from Plattsmouth said, I just want all of you to know how much I appreciate all the hours of information and pleasure you've given me this past year. Thank you to all the readers and the staff who make it come over the air and out of my radio. I don't know how you do it, but you do it. Thank you again. From Nebraska Governor Mike Johans, I have a tremendous amount of appreciation for the very good work done by Radio Talking Book Services. Thousands of Nebraskans have been served by this very, very worthwhile service. A new Omaha listener who recently lost her vision said, thank you so very much. I just love your programs. You're truly the answer to my prayers. And a donor from Thayer County in Nebraska wrote, I'm legally blind, so really enjoy Radio Talking Book and surely do miss it when it does not come in here. Thanks to all your readers. A woman who lives near the Nebraska-Kansas border said, for nearly 2 years I've enjoyed the use of the Radio Talking Book Network. I am unable to express in words the many empty hours which were filled once I had access to your service. And a donor in Spokane, Washington wrote, the enclosed memorial is for my dear uncle who died recently. After he lost his vision to macular degeneration, he missed his happy hours reading newspapers, magazines, and books. He had a lively mind and many interests. I know that Radio Talking Book helped fill the void that resulted from his loss of vision. Thank you for what you gave to my uncle. And I mentioned that Mike Johans had a quote here. We heard from him recently. too. This letter came this week. And the governor said, I believe strongly in radio talking book services. My hopes are that this program that benefits thousands of Nebraskans with visual or physical disabilities will receive all the financial support it needs in order to serve the thousands of Nebraskans that depend on it. As governor, I am deeply committed to doing everything I can to make sure that Nebraskans with visual and physical disabilities can continue to benefit from this program. I cannot think of a more worthy program and will support your efforts in this matter in any way that I can. Sincerely, Mike Johans, Governor of Nebraska. Again, the loss of funding for us would be very, very difficult. I've told you in the late 80s, half of our revenue we got from RSVI. We're at 22% now. If it was cut another 20,000, we'd be down to 13%, which would just put us in. I think we've gotten four checks this month, and one of them's been from our quarterly payment. When I first started the radio talking book, there were times when I didn't know if we were going to be able to pay our announcers. We sure don't want to get in that situation again. I'll be glad to answer any questions that you have. We sure appreciate your time today, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
I have a couple questions. On Listening Link, do you have like a breakdown of RTB's overall budget? What goes to the main broadcast versus Listening Link versus the descriptive audio? Is it advanced? Is the budget broken down in such a way?
You know, we don't do our budget that way. Because there's some shared responsibilities, the amount that goes toward Listening Link is about $40,000 out of our $230,000 budget. We have she's not full-time, she's about three-quarter time, who's the administrator of the program. She's also our office administrator, so a lot of times it's kind of hard to differentiate. We do have volunteer readers, but there's a tremendous amount of, you know, we have costs in training, we have costs in, you know, administrative costs. Out of our $230,000 budget, I'd say 40 would go to Listening Link.
Does the colleges, when they call you for Listening Link and want material recorded for their students, do they pay you for that?
Yeah, they're paid. They are paying. It helps cover the expense of the cassettes.
But I mean, why wouldn't you charge the full cost? Aren't the schools required to provide, because of ADA and other laws, to provide their students the material? So, I mean, if you're providing that service, is there any reason why you can't charge the full cost?
We could look. We've looked at our costs and so forth over the years. I mean, a lot of the schools are it's kind of taking money out of one pocket and putting it into another. I worked in a corporate situation for over 20 years, and we're trying to provide services to as many visually impaired and blind people as we can, and do it in a cost-effective way. If we lose some money, I'm sure there'll be several things that we'll look at. We may have to look at eliminating part of the program, increasing the amount that we charge for tapes. I think there's lots of things we'd have to look at.
But again, I mean, is there any reason why you don't charge the full cost? I mean, sure the school would love to pay as little as possible, but if they're required to obtain that material and you're providing the service, why wouldn't you charge them the full amount that it costs? So it's in the sense that, you know, maybe even at least revenue neutral, if not revenue plus. Is there any reason why that couldn't be the case?
Well, when